This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Gold, bonds, and other places to hide. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Adrienne Hill in for Kai Rizdahl. It's Wednesday, the 6th of July. Good to have you with us. Volatility was the word of the day on global markets, all more or less tied to fallout from Brexit. Investors around the world, big and small, were hand-wringing about what might happen as the long, drawn-out process draws out. Many are looking for safe havens for their cash. Hence, we've seen the price of gold shoot up, and we'll get to that in a minute, and a big move into bonds. The yields on government bonds hit record lows in the U.S., U.K., and Japan, as part of what's being called a flight to safety. From the Marketplace desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Mitchell Hartman gets us started.
Flight to safety. Okay, so regular people out for a stroll might think tornado shelter before they think U.S. government treasury bonds. But that's what international investors are thinking right now, with the future of Europe and global economic growth so uncertain. And why U.S. treasuries? Analyst John Canale at LPL Financial says it's actually because a former safe haven isn't anymore.
Investors for years have been seeking safe haven in the London property market. So if you lived in Greece and Russia, or if you lived in Japan or China, you viewed a safe haven as owning a piece of real estate in Mayfair or Kensington or Chelsea or somewhere like that.
Then the Brexit vote. The British pound falls and UK real estate funds are in trouble. For investors, not so safe anymore.
And they looked around the globe for the next safe thing. Despite the problems that we have in this country, people view U.S. treasuries as the ultimate safe haven.
One effect of all this is to drive U.S. interest rates down even more, explains Dean Baker at the Center for Economic and Policy Research.
You know, if you're a homeowner, it's a great time to look and see if you can't refinance and save some money because mortgage rates are down. The bad news, you know, if you're retired, you know, you want to hold short-term money, then you're looking at lower returns, lower interest.
Now, the flight has been to many countries' bonds, not just those of the U.S., but, says Canale,
we actually have positive yields. So in other words, if you give the U.S. government your money, they actually give you something back. Whereas in Switzerland or Japan or Germany, the opposite happens.
Their bonds have negative interest, which is why U.S. treasuries are a safer safe haven than all the rest. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Like we mentioned at the top of the show, safety-seeking investors are also turning to gold. It's at a two-year high and up about 30% just this year. The stuff is pretty much indestructible. And of course, it's shiny, but it's not without risks, as Marketplace's Sabri Benishore reports.
Gold was produced by the collision of dying stars around 13.5 billion years ago. It's rare on Earth, and it's rare in the rest of the universe. Civilizations come and go, but gold will always be valuable.
Gold is a maintenance of purchasing power for the last 5,000 years.
George Giro is managing director of RBC Wealth Management. Buying gold is about avoiding uncertainty. If, for example, you're worried that the pound will tank, or the euro, or the yuan, or that the eurozone will fall apart, or inflation or deflation, well, you might hope to get into gold and ride it all out.
Gold is the type of insurance that you hope you never need.
But one thing gold is not is magic.
There's a cost to gold, which is that it doesn't do anything for you.
Katrina Lamb is head of investment strategy at MV Financial. Gold doesn't pay dividends. It doesn't have a yield. It just is?
There's a perception that gold is safe. You know, gold bars, it's kind of like the cash under your mattress. It's something that makes you sleep better at night. But the reality is that it's just a commodity that goes up and down like anything else.
In fact, it goes up a lot based on the politics and fears of the day. It's incredibly volatile.
Investors have been burned by that.
There's also a tax burden often associated with gold. Eric Parnell is with Gehring Capital Partners.
Typically what happens with gold is it is taxed as a collectible, which means it is taxed higher than, you know, the long-term capital gains rate.
So why, with all this downside, do we still see people pushing up the price of gold? Because, as Mitchell Hartman just talked about, a lot of alternatives look pretty sad. Chris Berry is founder of House Mountain Partners.
The government bond market globally, okay, which has also been a source of liquidity and safety, is not offering an attractive yield right now.
So people have been looking to gold. But advisors say, don't put all your eggs in one basket, even a golden one. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
The U.S. markets bounced into positive territory today after a bumpy start. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Fique tranquilo. That's don't worry in Portuguese, at least as well as I can pull it off, which isn't well. And it's what Orlando's tour guides are saying to their most coveted group of Latin American tourists, Brazilians. Every year, more than 700,000 Brazilians travel to Orlando. Renata Sego from WMFE Orlando checks in to see if the recent tragedies in the city have changed anybody's travel plans.
There's a tradition in Brazil. When a kid turns 15, they get a big party or a group trip to Orlando, away from their parents. Usually the latter wins.
Everybody wants to come to Orlando. Disney is the best thing ever. When you're 15, everybody dreams to see Mickey, Minnie.
Victor Costa works for Pegasus Transportation, one of more than a dozen Orlando companies that cater to Brazilian conventioneers, retirees, and teenagers embarking on a rite of passage. 15-year-old Olivia Ramos arrived with a group just 6 days after the shooting. It was a shock.
Brazil think that in Orlando everything is perfect. It was weird because we never heard about crimes in Orlando, and the week that I'm coming, I heard about so much things, and I get worried.
Parents were concerned about their kids, but not enough to change plans. Out of more than 200 kids, there was one cancellation. In their minds, Brazil has its problems, too, and the kids were determined to get a taste of American life.
We should be careful in all places in the whole world. I will not let this ruin my trip.
Within 24 hours of hopping off the plane, Ramos and the other 15-year-olds were hopping onto a coach bus to head to Magic Kingdom. Rocco Arcuri from travel company Pegasus says the alligator attack caused more anxiety than the shooting.
We've had concern from people, especially the mothers of the children with the gator attack. That hit a little bit more home, I think, than the other shooting to the international side.
Pegasus has seen bookings go down, but Vice President Claudia Meneses says it's not because of the events of recent weeks.
It was sad, but like we saw more the economic problems in Brazil were more like an influence. Some groups were affected. There was a drop in the demand. There was not like as much shopping as before.
The country is grappling with its weakening currency and the kinks in its political fabric, but the draws are still here, according to Meneses. Weather, theme parks, and shopping.
A pair of jeans in Brazil can cost about $100 versus you pay like here $15, $20.
And Orlando hopes that and its reputation as home to the happiest place on earth will keep Brazilians coming back. In Orlando, I'm Renata Sego for Marketplace.
Coming later this year, a rule the Labor Department says will make millions of employees eligible for overtime pay. The Obama administration is calling it a major win for U.S. workers. Still, Republican lawmakers in Congress have vowed to block it. And some companies say they're going to change their business models if it goes into effect. They warn the rule could ultimately mean fewer hours and less pay for employees. Marketplace's Andy Euler reports.
First of all, not a whole lot of people affected by this rule change know about it. It won't go into effect until December 1st, and there's been very little publicity, which kind of makes sense because employers aren't that eager to pay employees more. Caleb Sneeringer was a manager at a Walgreens in Waco, Texas. He says he still knows people there who would definitely be affected by this rule change.
And I don't think they have any clue.
And labor laws are complicated. There are two ways to become eligible for overtime. Employers often get out of paying it by classifying workers as managers. The other way sort of protects people with that status because the new rule raises the salary test for those workers. So before, if you were a manager at, say, a Walgreens and you made more than $23,000, you couldn't get overtime. So those employees were often given more work because it was essentially already paid for. Now that salary threshold is double. $47,000. Caleb Sneeringer was making $46,000 at his Walgreens.
I would have been affected, and I would have been affected in the places where the most damage to me kind of was done in terms of how much of a personal life I could have and how much, I don't want to say abuse, but if you're a hard worker, you can get overworked and overused.
Dawn Huey worked in retail for more than 20 years until getting injured on the job and retiring. She's become something of a spokesperson for the rule change.
When I applied for the job at Dollar General, they told me that that position would be 44 hours a week, a varied schedule, maybe a couple nights, and that was not true very long. I was opening and closing the store every day, so from 7:30 in the morning until 10:30 at night, every day, 7 days a week.
Under the new rule, Huey would have been getting paid a lot of overtime hours at time and a half, and that's expensive. Businesses are already talking about eliminating the salary positions altogether and moving those employees to hourly. Or they'll bump the manager's salary to just above the threshold to make sure they don't qualify for time and a half.
What if they take all the store managers now and put them just over $50,000 a year? There's going to be a whole lot of happy store managers because Dollar General don't pay anybody close to that amount. Fine, let them take them above the $50,000 a year. You know, that would have made me very happy.
Whether paying people for all the hours they work is going to make those chain stores and boardrooms very happy is not very likely. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Coming up,
reef tourism on the Barrier Reef is worth $5 billion a year.
But who wants to go snorkeling with a bunch of bleached out coral? First, let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 78 points, 0.4%, to end at 17,918. The Nasdaq rose 36 points, 0.75%, to close at 4859. The S&P 500 gained 11 points, 0.5%, to end at 2099. Biotech stocks were on a roll today. AbbVie and Biogen said the European Union has approved their MS drug. AbbVie gained 2.3%. Biogen bumped up 2.25%. Nortec leapt 38.5%. The maker of heating and ventilation systems agreed to be purchased by Melrose Industry. Melrose rose more than 45% today. Netflix flopped 3.3% after an analyst at Jefferies & Company downgraded the stock on prospects of increasing competition, but other consumer stocks gained today. Online retailer Amazon bounced 1.3%. Used auto dealership CarMax revved up 5.75%. Bond prices fell slightly. The yield on the 10-year T-note was at 1.37%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Gusto. Let your employees know you've got their back by signing up for Gusto for payroll and HR. More than 300,000 small business owners use Gusto. They offer benefits like health insurance, employee onboarding, and more. Get your payroll taxes filed, deductions calculated, and your team paid fast. No more pain. Just the joy of running your business. Get 3 months free when you go to gusto.com/marketplace. That's gusto.com/marketplace.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail. Or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. On the podcast How I Built This, host Guy Raz talks to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt, failure, and how they were able to overcome setbacks on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. Listen early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more business content like this, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.
This is Marketplace. I'm Adrian Hill. The Consumer Product Safety Commission announced today the recall of 500,000 self-balancing scooters. You probably heard them called hoverboards. Turns out the safety issues that prompted the recall go way beyond keeping your balance. Gigi Duban reports.
If you've got an afternoon to kill, pull up videos of hoverboard fails. This one shows a guy on a hoverboard, and this kid is videoing when he takes a nasty fall.
You okay?
Yeah.
See, that's why it's really dangerous. You okay? You can't go up steps.
The kid wasn't lying about one thing. Hoverboards are dangerous. Patty Davis is with the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission. She says when hoverboards were brand new last August, it was people falling. Then things got worse.
People have had their entire homes burned down. They've lost animals. They've had their cars set on fire.
That's because the battery would overheat and catch fire. Davis says hoverboards were the hottest gift this past holiday season. They got really popular really quickly. Problem was,
they were all made in China, and they did not have any safety standard.
K.M. Abraham is a lithium-ion battery consultant and wrote a paper called Exploding Hoverboards. He says as more companies started making them, they started to cut corners.
That means they need to put in cheap batteries without a lot of care taken into manufacturing them.
Now that there is a safety standard, manufacturers are offering refunds and repairs on older devices. Segway, for one, came out with a hoverboard that is safety certified. Those started out costing more than a grand. Now, they're on sale for less than $500. I'm Gigi Duban for Marketplace.
Thank you.
It can be hard to remember those bygone days of shopping when we actually had to go to the store to pick something up instead of just clicking around online. But some retailers are finding people want to come in and shop and are flourishing because of it. Take Ulta Beauty. It's a makeup and skincare chain with more than 970 stores planned by the end of the year. Sales were up nearly 24% last quarter. Elizabeth Holmes is senior style reporter for the Wall Street Journal, and she looked into why Ulta is doing so well right now. Hey, Elizabeth.
Hi, Adrian.
So for folks out there like my father who've probably never been inside an Ulta, can you describe the store? What are we talking about?
Well, for beauty enthusiasts, it's a destination and one not like any other in the beauty landscape today. It combines a mix of mass brands with prestige brands. So the stuff you might buy at a drugstore, like a good mascara, or you might go to a department store, like a nice foundation, you can get them all under one roof. And there's frankly no other place in the beauty landscape that you can get that kind of thing. And they sell a little bit of everything. They sell $2 lip liners. They sell $200 hair dryers. So it's a one-stop shop for a lot of beauty lovers.
How did Ulta convince some of these high-end makeup brands to share store space and shelf space with what I can run to my CVS and buy right now for a couple bucks?
Well, it definitely took some convincing. And even in my reporting and talking to some of these prestige brands, they're pretty cautious about it, right? They have worked very hard to build up a certain level of cachet, and they like to be seen in a Tony department store environment where people sort of get maybe dressed up to go shopping. And so
where we're willing to spend $20 on a lipstick. Or more.
Exactly. Exactly. And sit down in a chair and talk to someone. You know, that sort of old school way of beauty shopping is not necessarily how, you know, millennials are used to shopping. And so Ulta made the case, and, you know, Sephora's doing it too, saying, hey, why don't you come in and play around and spend some time in our stores? And these prestige brands found that there's a thing called mass migration. So if a shopper comes into Ulta and says, oh my goodness, you know, I am looking at this mascara over here, but look at this other slightly more expensive, nicer mascara on the other side of the store. And so they're converting shoppers that way, and that won them over.
At a time when so many other retailers are sort of struggling in this economy, Ulta's notched up some pretty dramatic sales growth. Why is that?
Well, so un-Amazonable, I think, is the highest compliment you can give in retail today. And that's what one Wall Street analyst called Ulta. And it's because the stores are a place that women like to go. They spend a lot of time there, 15 or 30 minutes, which is actually a big win in today's retail landscape. And they like to go to the store because they can test the lipstick. They can get a blowout. There are salons in every Ulta. Most Ultas also have a brow bar to get your eyebrows waxed or a facial station. So there's things you can do in the store and spend time. And people really like that. Also, they have a very robust loyalty program. So they're adding a lot of value to the spending equation without necessarily offering discounts off. And so shoppers feel like they're getting a good deal.
What else is driving the beauty sector more broadly right now?
Well, beauty is sort of immune to a lot of things that are plaguing apparel right now. There's no sizes, obviously, and there's nothing to make a woman sort of
so
second
good.
Guess. Exactly. And like looking, you don't have to look for a fitting room to try on your lipstick. It's also not subject to weather, right? So you can wear lipstick in the winter or the summer. And it's fun for a lot of women. They see it as entertainment. And it's fairly accessibly priced. You know what I mean? Even some of the higher stuff that can be kind of expensive, you can save your pennies for that. Whereas in apparel, you sort of get, you know, you can get into the high reaches and only a small part of the shopper base can participate in that.
What's the last piece of makeup you shop for?
Oh, my goodness. I love a good mascara, and it was really interesting. At Ulta, they had a stand in the middle of the aisle, and it was from Dior. And I said, what is this? And it was two different types of Dior mascaras that Dior was sort of testing the waters in with Ulta. And they were just trying two different mascaras, but then, you know, here is Ulta saying that we carry Dior alongside CoverGirl. And so I think it's a really interesting proposition and one that perhaps more brands should take a lesson from, that even if they don't necessarily think they want to share the same space as different price points, that's how shoppers shop today.
Did you buy the Dior?
I did. It's really good.
Elizabeth Holmes is senior style reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Adrian.
We'll be right back.
Warmer oceans are bad news for coral reefs, but not the only man-made problem they face. Overfishing and pollution are harming reefs around the world and threatening billions in tourism dollars. BBC business reporter Vivian Nunes has compiled a report from Sri Lanka and Australia.
One of the worst affected areas is off the south coast of Sri Lanka. This is the sound of fishermen there bringing in their catch, hundreds of tuna, some groupers, and the odd hammerhead shark. The sea providing that bounty is also home to some of the world's most spectacular coral reefs, and they're dying.
So if you could imagine walking through a tropical rainforest with all the beautiful, colorful birds, parrots, and having this beautiful canopy of palm trees and tropical flora, and burning it down, it's pretty bleak.
Dr. Carrie Manfrino is a marine geologist. She says some of the coral near Sri Lanka is 300 years old, but 30% of the reef there is dead thanks to humans.
You know, when you go across a reef and all of a sudden you see complete mortality and the corals all crunched up into little fragments, it's a bit shocking. And so what we see in Sri Lanka is that the fishermen are really having a devastating impact from anchors and from nets. And unfortunately also from dynamite fishing.
Fishing causes huge problems for coral reefs, but the biggest threat comes from climate change and warming seas. Prince Edward is royal patron of the Central Caribbean Marine Institute.
We have to do something about it very quickly, and if we can try and slow down the rate of increase in temperature, then that's got to be a positive. And the next time you go to a warmer country, put on a face mask and look under the water and appreciate it. You may not be able to appreciate it for very long.
This year, for the third time in history, reefs around the world have simultaneously bleached in response to the rising ocean temperatures. Professor Terry Hughes is described as the world's preeminent coral scientist.
A bleached coral is a very sick coral. It turns white because it loses the microscopic algae that lives inside the coral that provides the coral with nutrition through photosynthesis.
Over the past few months, Professor Hughes has spent hundreds of hours in a helicopter and in a diving suit monitoring the Great Barrier Reef. He delivers a grim report.
Unfortunately, we've seen unprecedented levels of damage to the northern part of the Great Barrier Reef. That's the most remote and most pristine part. So for close to 8 kilometres in the northern third of the reef, we're now seeing losses of corals approaching 50%.
The health of the Great Barrier Reef has become a hot topic in Australia, where a federal election campaign is in full swing. Both major parties have promised money for reducing sediment and pesticide runoff and for culling an invasive species of coral-eating starfish. Yet both parties also support more coal mining, and the Australian government has given the green light for one of the world's biggest coal mines to be built near the reef, a multi-billion dollar investment by the Indian multinational Adani Group. Professor Terry Hughes says that would mean an increase in shipping, dredging and pollution, and that's simply incompatible with a healthy reef.
Economically, the best reason for preserving the Great Barrier Reef is because of the value it provides to Australia's economy from reef tourism. Reef tourism on the Barrier Reef is worth $5 billion US dollars a year, and it employs 70,000 people. That number is huge compared to the 1,400 people that would be employed by the world's newest coal mine.
Professor Hughes says there's a window of opportunity to save the reef, but it's closing, and global emissions must be reduced now.
That was BBC business reporter Vivian Nunes. This final note before we go today, a job with perhaps the world's best title, hedgehog officer. If you got a job title better than that, I want to hear about it. According to The Telegraph, Suffolk Wildlife Trust in the UK is looking for a hedgehog officer who will, quote, be the face of hedgehog conservation in Ipswich. Turns out Ipswich is on a mission to become the most hedgehog-friendly town in the UK. bold. And let's say you aren't quite ready to devote your life's work to hedgehogs. Turns out there's a hedgehog cafe in Tokyo where for $9 an hour, you can play with and cuddle hedgehogs. But you wouldn't get that amazing hedgehog officer business card. That's our show today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 78 points, 0.4%, and at 17,918. The Nasdaq rose 36 points, 0.75%, to close at 4859. The S&P 500 gained 11 points, 0.5%, to end at 2099. Chris Clark, Brad Fisher, Jake Gorski, Bill Lands, Jeff Peters, Daniel Ramirez, Charlton Thorpe, and Ben Tolliday engineer the program for us. I'm Adrienne Hill. We'll see you here tomorrow. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.